This is the Podwebbit Network.
All lives don't matter if black lives don't matter. Next on IGLR. Yes, what is good? However this may be finding you, we thank you for finding us. This is Intentional Grounding, Loss of Reality, here on the Podwebbit Network. I am your reality guide, the Quasi Wabbit, alongside today with my co-host, Frank Harris. Frank, what is good, sir?
I am good, and I am ready to make this happen. You know, it's exciting knowing that we're being heard throughout the world. I mean, even in Bangladesh, people are listening to Intentional Grounding, Loss of Reality.
Many places wide and far, and that's why we do this thing. And let's get it going. I think we have some good reality checks to hand out, and most importantly for this particular topic, some solutions that we'll try and get going. So this is episode 10, as we mentioned, of Intentional Grounding. The title of this episode is All Lives Don't Matter If Black Lives Don't Matter. And before we get into this particular podcast, which is going to be broken down into three segments, we're going to talk about some history, change, and solutions. I need to preface this podcast with kind of laying the foundation for a couple things. And I do this because, unfortunately, there are people that we interact with, and if you don't say these things, they're going to assume that. So I want to kind of squash any of the doubters and the haters out there. So first of all, first point, the opinions in this podcast are our opinions. No one is paying us. We speak freely and thoughtfully on that. The following does not in any way dismiss or ignore other social issues of the day. And I hear this all the time. When we bring up subjects like this, people say, what about others that are struggling? It's a big platform that we have. When my brothers and sisters in the LGBT community speak out on issues, I'm not interrupting them with issues that affect me. Do you get it? Next point. There are good cops doing good things in their community. There are good citizens doing good things in their communities. Next point. I 100% do not condone citizens killing police officers. I also 100% do not condone police officers killing citizens. And as the title of this podcast is, if black lives don't matter, all lives don't matter. Now, we don't have all the answers. Of course, we wish we did. But we can't go quietly into the night. We must keep up the fight. And before we can, we must partake in understanding the history, looking at things we can change within ourselves, but most importantly, working on solutions. I hope to spark some constructive thoughts in your cranium, inspire you to do the same, to share with others. Instead of having a Chewbacca video going viral, let's go viral in our actions to end centuries of hate, violence, and injustice. Before I move on into our topics, Harris, is there anything you'd like to add, sir?
No, I think you hit everything right on the head, sir.
All right. Well, before we get going into our first section, I'm going to pause just for a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little history. Going to get into the first topic, and that is history. And why I bring it up, it's important to understand not only your own history, but the history of others. And I think that's part of the problem when we see people make comments, either in person or on social media, they just have a basic lack of understanding of history. In this particular case, understanding the history of the black community as it relates to the police and the law. Now take the LAPD, for example. I'm not going to give you a history lesson here. There's a thing called Google. It's free. I'll throw another term at you that I would encourage you to look up. The Mulford Act. Now there's an article that I'm going to post on the website at podwebit.com for this podcast that was put out by The Atlantic titled The Secret History of Guns. I would encourage you to read the article. It's very in-depth, very heavy, but also drops a lot of history. And once you understand the history, once you understand how the Mulford Act came to pass, the reasonings behind it, I hope that it gives you a better understanding of what's going on today. Another point in terms of history, we hear people say to stop living in the past when it relates to the African-American experience here in the United States. I find it a little odd because we always see or hear never forget 9/11 or never forget the Holocaust. I'm not saying you should forget that. But then whenever we bring up issues, it's forget slavery. I got a problem with that, and it's hypocritical, and you can't be doing that. Harris, any thoughts on those particular points before we move on, sir?
Well, I agree with you as far as the forget slavery, but I think that's brought into play because if you notice, a lot of the other races were given some type of a, how do I say this? I don't want to say a pension. They were given some type of a reparation, and they don't want to give African Americans reparation. And I believe the reason why, it would be quite extensive. They'd have to open up the pocketbook pretty much, and it could break them. So you want to try to put that behind you and keep going, but then at the same time, they're not dealing with the issues. The issues should have been dealt with a long time ago so that once we got to this point now, we wouldn't be at the crossroads where we're at now.
Yeah, and I think that particular subject, we could have a conversation on that in terms of
today.
Yeah, in terms of what's going on today. It's just understanding the history where we're at. We didn't just arrive at this past week or this past month.
Right.
It's been going on for centuries. And when you've been beat down and when you've been accused and labeled, I mean, how many times do we hear, and we'll get into some of these other examples, when other situations, when you've been, even as we talk about kids, if you've been neglected, mentally abused, etc., it affects you as you grow older. But then I hear the argument, well, you weren't around during slavery. And it's just a lot of comments that to me are disingenuous. It just kind of shrugs off the experience and the issues of the day. And there's even been studies that sometimes these things can be passed through generations in terms of feelings and thoughts and et cetera. So I would just be cautious about how you say we should not forget events. I mean, those are in the past. Again, I'm not saying don't forget 9/11, but you can't pick and choose what you want to remember in history. And you have to acknowledge and understand that. So as you move forward, when you look at what do I need to do to change myself? And what do we look at solutions? This is why I'm covering this topic. You must have the basic foundation of history to understand where we're at today. Without it, you really should have no place at the table and focus on other things if you don't want to have part of that. Because people speak out on things. If you're going to do it, you need to be intelligent what you're talking about.
And not only that, you also have to remember, too, that people who don't learn from their history, they often wind up repeating history because they didn't learn from the past. So something else arises, and it's basically the complete situation all over again, but perhaps a different parameter, and guess what? you're dealing with it all over again. And had you took care of what happened in the past completely, you wouldn't be dealing with the issue right now.
The other thing in terms of history, that whenever we hear of a shooting that comes out, people like to refer to they had history. And this bothers me that when a black man is shot, there are people that will refer to their quote-unquote rap sheet. I'm going to get into that later. But again, just the hypocrisy in, as I said earlier in that last segment, forget slavery, but let's go back and look at your rap sheet. Now, again, I understand the differences. I don't need to be lectured or corrected on that. I'm just pointing out that you can't pick and choose, and that leads into my last point. Stop cherry-picking history. There are outstanding citizens, and people refuse to make any comments, but when someone is labeled a criminal or quote-unquote thug, people like to dig up their past. So again, if you're going to do that, then do it all the time. Be fair at least, but just stop the cherry picking. It's just a bad look on you in general. And when I'm talking about you, another thing I need to preface real quick, there are people that are going to listen to this podcast, absolutely get it, may not even need to listen to it. There are going to be some things that may be uncomfortable for folks, and that's fine. I would hope that you listen, take in what's being said, and think about it. There's not meant to be any personal attacks, but there are things that I either hear or see on social media that, in addition to some other things, has brought on this podcast. And I think it's very important to understand what we're trying to convey across. Now, I have no problems with people that want to yell at the mic. I've said this before when we started this particular PodWabbit Network. But I just want to convey some ideas to you guys, the people that are out there posting things. I'm going to get into a couple of things. I'm not going to mention names. I don't play that game. But I will be giving some examples of what I've seen out there. And this is directed at those that need to think. So before we move on into our next topic of change, any final comments, Harris?
No, I think you've covered every point right now.
All right. Take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about change. We talked about some history, and now I want to get into change. And it's not the same thing as solutions. I'm bringing this up because I think there needs to be a change within ourselves, change in behavior, things that we do, things that we say. Think about things versus reacting. So I'm going to go into a couple different things. I'm going to start out with changing your narrative in response to a couple of these type of situations. So when a woman is raped, no one says men are also raped. Now, there might be a few, but that's not generally what happens. When a black brother or sister is murdered, I hear that argument out there, well, white people are also murdered too. Again, it's just a disingenuous response that when we make these comments, we are not ignoring or saying other people are suffering. It really bothers me that you can't have this platform when talking about what happens to African Americans without someone out there saying, hey, everybody else suffers too. The other thing is, be consistent in how you apply amendments of free speech that allow protest and Second Amendment rights. I find it interesting that the NRA is quiet after citizens are shot that rightfully carried, yet vocal after Dallas. Now, I understand the history of the Constitution. I didn't really get into that earlier. And I know that at some point, blacks were not able to vote. They were not able to carry weapons. But this is now 2016, and people use the Constitution as an argument, but it seems when it benefits them. But when it's everyone else, we again tend to kind of blur that lines. Maybe it doesn't really apply. And again, I can't follow up enough. When a man rapes a woman, not all men are rapists. But to the victim, you can understand their fear. When a black man is harassed constantly or sees his brother murdered on TV, can you understand their fear? Harris, any thoughts before I move on?
In social media today, people think that they have the right to speak out on things and issues that really they have no right to speak about or talk about. And we just need to know our place and when the time is right, speak on something that is something we know. And if it's not, just fall back and see what happens.
Yeah, or just take the time to listen and learn from others. Again, I mentioned that reaction, and I think that's what happens on social media. Sure, we all have all the right to say what we want, but then I think some people are uncomfortable with the responses, or maybe are not prepared that if you say something that's ignorant, if you say something that's false, that's not true, then we have the right to come in and try and educate you. Now, if someone's going to roll up on you and start calling names and things of that sort, that's another situation. I mean, ideally, we would like to have a conversation that is intelligent, that is civil. I get all that. And that's part of the issue with social media is the reaction. People take things personally. People, for whatever reason, just snap. And sometimes exactly. You just need to kind of take a moment, think about the subject you're talking about. And as you said, if you don't know anything about it, be very careful what you're saying. And if you're going to put something out there, don't be surprised when someone comes back with a response you're not expecting. And again, this is why I harp on the history. Once you understand, and again, I really would encourage you, I'm going to mention some other articles, take the time to read it, educate yourself. I don't think people spend enough time in understanding it. So it's real critical that that message gets across, that really takes some time to think. Now, another point I want to mention here in terms of some of the narratives that's being used. When Dylann Roof took the lives of 9 black citizens in that church, the narrative was, quote, he's got mental health issues, end quote, what generally people would say. But when Alton in Louisiana was gunned down, the narrative is he's got a criminal past. And this becomes a pattern. The gentleman in Aurora, same type of situation, mental health issues. The school shooting in Sandy Hook, mental health issues. I didn't hear that with the gentleman in Minnesota. I didn't hear that in Baltimore. When African Americans do something that runs afoul of the law, for whatever reasons, it's not mental health. So again, that narrative, if you feel that's the case, then look at yourself and ask, why are you saying this? Is there something in your past that you haven't experienced? We're going to get into some of these things in terms of looking in the mirror, because we've all had things that have happened. Or are you just not mentally prepared enough to have the conversation and are just spouting off nonsense? Next point, stop the petty bickering online and show some compassion for both sides. Now, I'm borrowing this here from someone online, and I didn't get permission, so I don't want to mention the name online. I should do that, but I'm going to go ahead and this was borrowed from someone on Facebook. You can simultaneously condemn unjustified extrajudicial killings and killing of officers protecting the peaceful protesters. To think you can't exposes the limits of your reasoning abilities. And again, it kind of goes to my earlier point when we talk about, if you talk about one issue, you for some reason, the thought is you're not addressing the others. And what did I lay out in the preface? I have no tolerance for the killing of police nor killing of African-American citizens at the hands of police officers. Another point, and this is something that is hard to do. I work on this in many subjects online. Stop and think before reacting. Let the facts come in. Ask Mark Hughes. Don't know who Mark is? Google it. It's free. Next point. Stop blaming. Cops die and people are putting the blame on Obama or Black Lives Matter movement. When civilians die at the hands of police, it's the victim's fault. That seems to be the narrative that is put out there. This one is going to be a little lengthy and is kind of a irritant that some could say I just need to walk away from Facebook or social media, but I can't do that. Stop with the silly memes that have zero logic, but yet show a ton of ignorance. Classic example, in Dallas, when shots were fired, people wanted protection from those they were protesting. That was the title of the meme. Again, this is wrong. Organizers of the protests worked with Dallas Police Department on coordinating. They were not protesting the police there. They were protesting injustices by certain police officers. I know, maybe if they all carried weapons, because that tends to be the response. But let's be honest for a minute. How uncomfortable would that make people feel? Large gathering of Black folks with guns? Again, Mulford Act, if you know your history, it's a tough pickle to be in, especially when you are a gun advocate. Plus, the last I checked, people split. Now, I don't recall in watching this coverage that people were huddling behind officers crying, "Protect me." People were saying, "We're out." That's just a natural reaction. When a house is on fire, people exit. Firemen and women rush in. When people start shooting, people flee, and policemen and women rush in. Heck, what do police say? Get back. What are you supposed to say? Sorry, officer, someone on the internet thinks I need to rush in too. I did not see the same people who are putting these silly memes sharing the picture of a Black citizen holding a sign that said "No justice, no peace" with a white officer and a Black officer of the Dallas Police Department. It's very easy to focus on the negative and feel the fire of hatred and ignorance. Again, do you want to be part of the change or part of the problem? Harris, any thoughts before we move on, sir?
I just think, sadly, that a lot of these people, they are the problem, because they're the ones who, they don't want change. They like things the way that it is. And as long as these people are at the forefront and, you know, people like us aren't stepping out in full mass, none of this will ever change.
Agree. Now, this one here might rub some people the wrong way, but again, I spent the last probably 3 days thinking about what really to say, and I've put a lot of things down. I typically don't put notes down. I just kind of run with things, but there's just too much in here. So this may not really come across the best way. I'm going to do the best I can, but I haven't heard any people talk about this, but I'm just going to throw it out there. The pro-life movement, because they advocate life is important. But life doesn't end at birth. The people that I see showing sympathy when a Black person's shot is always the same. Those saying nothing, your silence speaks volumes. What do we hear the sayings from the good book, "Love thy neighbor, do unto others as you." You know those things. And I got to be careful on this. But if you are of faith, if you are of pro-life, if you believe that all life matters, don't just stop when birth happens or at conception. Have sympathy for everyone. It may sound silly and cheesy, but again, if that's the foundation, you've got to apply that to everybody. Next point is the All Lives Matter. It's similar to liking something on Facebook. Yes, we know all lives matter, but on social media, I think it's real easy for people just to throw that out there. It's easy to say, yet reality, all lives don't, based on numbers we've seen. Even in real life, we see a homeless person. I'm talking about people that are homeless, not the ones that are posers. Prisons are privatized. Katrina victims sat on roofs for days. Again, if all lives matter, actions speak louder than words. Next point, and I mentioned this earlier, is stop bringing up rap sheets. It feeds the narrative that has gone on in history, that blacks are quote-unquote thugs, and if only they followed the officer orders, not had a broken taillight. Now, this is not to excuse anybody's past, but at the present moment, what was Alton doing that was wrong? What was Castile doing that was wrong that warranted execution? To bring up this type of a situation in terms of their criminal past, it only feeds into the narrative of, there they go again, a bunch of criminals. Now, I say this because on social media, and I'm not going to mention any names, there were posts where someone took the time, whether or not these were true or false, to put up the rap sheet of Alton Sterling. They went back as far as 1996. And I'm watching this and I'm livid. Now, we all have history of doing things. Maybe not to this extent. But again, if these are if these people have either been convicted, served time, had things dismissed, then the justice system, quote-unquote, ran its course. And you should not be judging. Heck, you're not supposed to, it's what, double jeopardy. You're not supposed to charge a person twice with the same crime, yet internet justice warriors or keyboard warriors love to bring that up. And that's what it feels like. You're doing double jeopardy. And then to read some of the comments that follow after, and I'm just going to have to throw this out there because it's easy just to say that, but when you read the comments, quote, "That rap sheet is Alton Fellows, right? The sex offender thing alone, to me, if it's true sex offender deal, says he deserves death." Think about that for a minute. Who gave you the right to be the judge, jury, and convictioner? Deserves death. And then
the reason why I'm quiet right now, because it's like I want to say something, but at the same time, you're right in what you're saying, but at the same time, it is such a slippery slope, because do you know where I want to go with this now?
Let me finish this up on Castile, and I'll get to you real quick.
Okay.
So then we move on to Castile. This is the gentleman that had the concealed carry. And there's another article where there's a laundry list of charges. And I'm just looking at this, and all I'm thinking is, two gentlemen just lost their lives. They didn't get to go home Tuesday night and Wednesday night. And this is what you're doing? Now, I didn't see anyone going out and pulling up the records of the five officers in Dallas to try and dig up any type of dirt on them. It's not warranted. I would never encourage that. But why is it? And I'm looking for an honest answer. Why is it? I mean, I know, but I want to hear from those that do it. That you've got to go there to demean, deface, disregard what happens. Harris, let me turn it over to you before I move on.
No, the only thing I was going to say was it's a very slippery slope, because what you're talking about, that can also pertain to OJ. And yes, I know OJ did it, but at the same time, that court basically put him in jail for, well, I won't say they put him in jail. He was going to be sentenced in jail anyway, but the amount of time they gave him was basically payback for what happened in his past. So,
I mean, I'm going to read you a response that I got. And again, I'm not mentioning the name. I'm just going to read, and I just want you to kind of hear what, and this is just a sample. It's one person, but trust me, there are other similar type comments that I've said. We could go all night with these things, and I'm sure there are those of you listening that have seen similar. But for those that don't see this, this is really, I want you to kind of hear this. Wait. You saw a video of the driver before he was shot? I'm sorry, I only saw a video of the driver shot after allegedly not obeying commands to keep his hands away from his side. Now let me stop right there. If you listen to what was just said there, he didn't see the entire video. He's going based on what the cop says. So right there, you're already taken a side here. So this person goes on. I think you're listening to an emotional person sitting next to her mate. I don't think you're seeing anything at all of what you're saying. If the officer said don't move or keep your hands up, should he have simply taken a 50-50 chance as that the guy was going to kill him or not? Listening to an emotional person sitting next to her mate, to me that just doesn't show any sense of compassion being a human. Maybe you've never been in that situation before. So let me continue on. Come on now. You're a uniformed police officer and you've got kids at home. You got a guy in a car with a gun and you've asked him not to reach. He reaches anyway. You confirm that? This is me talking now. You confirm this. Let me go on. You really gonna hang tight and hope for the best? Why are we crucifying a police officer so quick? Is it because of other cases and history? So we now just immediately go for the throw of the cop and hang the... I can't repeat the word there. I almost slipped up. See, slippery slope we are on here. As for the second shooting, again, he had a gun. He was reaching for it. If you have a gun and choose to disobey the police officer who is lawfully executing his or her duty, you might get shot. This is the narrative that I'm talking about that is out there. And it needs to stop, and it needs to change, and it needs to do right now. The other point I want to bring on is taking another innocent life does what? Now, I had not intended to talk about the situation in Dallas when I was doing the setup for this podcast, but that happened. And anyone that says that we need to take another person's life to somehow bring justice, as much as pain as you're going through, it doesn't do anything. And in today's society, today's culture that is so on edge, when I saw what happened in Dallas and when I heard who had done it, it does not help what we're trying to do. Now, another thing that I want to mention too in terms of change, it's just not me that's talking. I'm going to read a quote here. I'm not going to tell you who said it, and then I'll throw the name at you and just have you think about it for a minute. Quote, "It took me a long time and a number of people talking to me through the years to get a sense of this. If you are a normal white American, the truth is you don't understand being black in America, and you instinctively underestimate the level of discrimination and the level of additional risk." White parents, I'm leaving the name out, continued, don't have to teach their teenage boys to be extra careful when dealing with the police because it's not part of your normal experience. This person wasn't finished. He described moving from a largely integrated life as a son of an army officer to Georgia in 1960. It was still legally separated, which meant the local sheriff and National Guard would impose by force the taking away of rights of Americans. We've come a far distance. Now we have a black mayor of Atlanta, and we've had a series of them in fact. We have John Lewis, who went from marching on Selma to Democratic whip in Congress. But we've stalled out on the cultural, economic, practical progress we needed. So the person that said that is none other than Newt Gingrich. It's the last person you would expect to say that. Now, people will say maybe it's for politics, for play, but what he's saying is true. So it just doesn't, it's not me that's making that comment. Recently, Governor Mark Dayton of Minnesota even stated, if it had been the passenger was white, would that have happened? He doesn't think so. Any thoughts, Harris, before I move on, sir?
None.
All right. Change the narrative. I mentioned this earlier, but the police ran in, citizens ran out. We understand the job of a police officer is dangerous. We understand the risks that are involved. There's a chance based on the line of work that is done, and not every citizen is outstanding. Should a citizen be also afraid that based on their color, if pulled over, or if they blink wrong, that could be the end? There's a saying that when nine people have a good experience, a few will hear about it. When that 10th person has a bad experience, everyone will hear about it. It's simply called doing your job versus not doing it. And I bring this up because there's this feeling that good cops don't get enough recognition, as if we're negating or ignoring them. Far from the contrary. Again, if you can't understand that, it shows lack of critical thinking. There is a clip going around on social media of a black motorist who shares his good experience with an officer. He was concealed carry. And there's nothing wrong with that, but I'm going to also share an article on our website by the New York Times titled "The Disproportionate Risk of Driving While Black." And while that gentleman's experience and his interaction with the officer is a good thing, you need to read this article to keep things in perspective, because his experience is not indicative of everyone's experience. So that rounds up my particular topics that I want to get on in terms of change. A lot of it I'm going to get into in the next segment in terms of solutions is looking at change within ourselves. So before we move on to the next segment, Harris, any other closing thoughts you have, sir, in terms of change and what we've said so far?
No.
When we come back, we're going to wrap this up and talk about what I think is most important and solutions. All right, we're going to round out this episode here of Intentional Grounding, Loss of Reality. All Lives Don't Matter If Black Lives Don't Matter, episode 10 here. So we've talked about the history, understanding it. We've talked about some changes and what we can do in each of us. But one thing that I think is important, and people talk about it, but I think it's not talked about enough, because everything's about throwing a like up, having your thoughts, we need to get along. And it's not to say that that's not important, but we need solutions. Now, I need to preface this. This is not intended to be these are the answers. These are solutions that are going to fix everything. We all have opinions on what we can do. But I've really tried to put some thought in the past couple days, listening to other people, listening to comments, talking to others, talking to family members. And I really, really wish we had solutions that would work, trust me. But I'm going to give it my best shot here. So before I get into that, a couple things that I I want to mention. And this was something that I was kind of thinking as I was talking to a friend online or conversing with a friend. And I kind of came up with this little saying here in terms of protest and pray, yet body bags all day. Solutions and resolutions, not talking and walking. And the point of that is, hey, again, I'm not knocking that you shouldn't protest, but at some point we need to actually have some solutions, because as we've seen with what happens in Dallas or other places, if someone starts shooting, if someone starts acting out, the message gets lost and we're not making any progress. Pray if you want, I get it, but the reality is, that's been done for how long, and people are still winding up in body bags. We need solutions. We can sit here and talk all day. We can go out in the streets and walk. But who's going to be the next Alton Sterling? The other thing I was thinking about, and this is something that I kind of grapple with, is MLK versus Malcolm X and the approach. The MLK way in theory is nice. The Malcolm X is that side of us that just wants to pop, but in reality it doesn't always beget change. We need a healthy mix of both. Protect yourself. You don't let anyone step, but is turning the cheek, it's not always the answer either. I've preached the love answer as costing zero energy. Yet we have so much history of abuse in our community, so much ignorance by many outside, that it's very hard. So moving on with some solutions. We need to start identifying the root cause. What are the underlying reasons that those few that are to protect and serve take justice into their own hands? Whether it's studies, commissions, again, I don't have the answers on that. But my point is, not all cops are bad. Why do we have those few that are giving the rest a bad name and causing the numbers of our brothers and sisters to continually happen every year? What's the underlying issue? Is it training?
Background.
Right. Is it training? Is it something in their background? Are these people that are given a badge and a gun, are they fit mentally to do the job? The next point, for those officers that unjustifiably take the life of another, convict them the same as done to citizens. In other words, the playing field needs to be leveled. When a citizen kills a police officer, they're put to death or locked away. When a police officer unjustifiably kills a citizen, what typically happens? Paid administrative leave, and then cleared of all charges. You can truly grieve for every officer lost in the line of duty and still be troubled by overreach. Those two ideas are not mutually exclusive. Have high regard for law enforcement, yet still hold them to a high standard. Another suggestion is to use Facebook Live or video to help preserve the facts and educate others. Now, this is something that actually caused a pain point in social media, where some people were calling it disrespectful, referring to the Alton shooting video. Some called it a snuff film. Some said we're not ready to see that. Now, there are those in the black community, when they saw that, that's probably nothing new to them, and it's sad to say that. My point is, there are people that don't need to see that. They understand that happens. But remember those people that I talked about putting those mimes and bringing up the rap sheets? If that's not something that tugs at your heart, that frustrates you, that makes you upset, I question if you have a heart. So use the videos. Be safe, obviously, But how many times have we heard in police reports he was going for his gun? He had a knife. He was attacking me. I feared for my life. Then we saw the video of Walter Scott. Please tell me how the officer feared for his life when a gentleman was running from the officer and was shot multiple times. Yet people forget about that. This is something that also bothers me. It's 2016 in the United States of America, and I have to check in on family and loved ones. My dad, who's black, I called him the other day just to say, hey, be safe. You doing okay? 2016, United States of America, and I've got to call my dad. Who does that? Who needs to do that? And I think that comes to some of the earlier points in terms of change. How many of you have to do that if you are not African American? You just assume, hey, you're going to make it home fine, safe. That one really hit home, the fact that, and I'm saying it now to all my friends, be safe. Shouldn't have to do that. Next solution, educate the haters. And this one is probably one of the hardest ones to do. I struggle with it. Kind of borrowing this from someone that I saw on social media, and I kind of did some modification, but all these unfriend me if you think insert whatever lives matter or block me does what. Have the debate, have the discussion. If you can't even have a discussion, you're part of the problem and not the solution. Now trust me, it's not an easy thing to do. Because people get personal. People start saying things, and it just doesn't make any sense, a waste of time. But if all you do is just unfollow, block, remove, you are going to continue the cycle that is out there. No, you're not responsible for what happens to when the police officers shoot in our community. But who's going to be calling for change? Who's going to be calling for these solutions if you're just sitting back and doing nothing? And that leads into the next one. Write your congressman or woman. Demand that they pass legislations that evens the playing field. Whether it's calling for proper improved police training, interacting with community when it comes to pulling people over or responding to situations. You know, I watch Lockup on the weekends, and it amazes me. You've got hardened criminals in prison, and when there's something that happens, the COs that have to interact with them, I'm not saying everything ends well, but people are able to be restrained. There's methods they use. Even in another classic example is a psych hospital, where restraints are not even being used. A patient acts out. They use hands-on techniques to protect themselves and the patients and others. But it used to be restraints were put on the patient. Now, I'm not trying to compare that to what the particular topic is, but what my point is, if you can understand that, that improved police training needs to be one of the solutions. Using deadly force should be the last method, not the first. Have good cops call out bad cops. We all hear about that code. We know that there are good cops, so do your job and call out those that are bad. I mentioned this earlier. Are those trained to carry a weapon mentally fit to? Expand beyond the walls of Facebook to enact action. One of the things that I've done personally, and I love having this platform of podcasting, as Harris mentioned earlier, all those that we can reach right now, I have maybe 400 and some friends on Facebook, and I probably interact with 1 or 2% of them. How is my message getting across? Maybe half of those 1%, 75% agree with me. This is no disrespect, but I'm talking to a brick wall. I'm not enacting any change. I'm not being part of the solution. So find ways to get out there beyond the walls of Facebook to interact. Now, one thing that you've not heard me mention throughout this entire podcast is the subject of guns. Remove or add more guns. I thought long and hard about this. I am a proponent of the Second Amendment. And to think banning or adding more is going to be a solution is not the answer. When you look at the history of race relations, and we're talking way back, guns aren't the problem. This is something that I'm kind of working on the side. A couple years back, I came up with the concept or the idea, called it Hug It Out. And something about, you know, we need to work together. We don't have to like everyone, but I felt that at that time that social media was distancing us and the human touch we've lost. And as I've watched what's happened this week, I'm not saying that hugs are going to end what we're talking about. I get all that. But I think it goes a long way to getting people to connect more. I think there's a lack of respect for our fellow citizens. We judge. We hear these studies that we see on TV. If someone of color is walking down the street, someone of non-color is going to go to the other side. We understand all those things. But I'm actually working with another group to try and get this actually going. We heard of the ice bucket challenge with Alzheimer's and how viral it went. I'm trying to work with people to create the next viral movement to get this going. Now, the love all, stop the hate. Again, no knock at that, but to me, I wish it were that simple. But after everything that is said, you realize it's not. It takes a lot of looking inward and asking, do you really want to change? Do you really want to be part of the change? Do you want to be really part of the solution? You've got to take a long, hard look into something that doesn't cost very much, the mirror. So again, these are just some suggestions. It's not a be-all, end-all. I would encourage you, if you're listening, come up with your own. Interact with us, the PodWabbit Network. You can find our contact information. Provide ideas. Let's keep this thing going, discussion going. Harris, any thoughts that you have in terms of solutions that you can think of or things that we can do instead of just talking about it?
I think the police are going to have to overhaul their whole system as far as the employment, the screening, and the training. Now, earlier, I spoke with a police officer myself because somebody tried to break into where I'm at, and we talked about this, and he said that, you know, the Dallas police, they're good police officers, which I agree with, too, because I lived in Texas for about 5 years, and I never had problems with the Dallas police officers. When they pulled me over, I would tell them, you know, if I had something in the car, what or whatever, and everything was always okay, no matter what the ethnicity of the cop was. And he said that they train the people here, which it makes sense because here in Pensacola, same thing. I haven't had any problems from the police officers. The only thing they worry about here is high speeding because there's a whole bunch of drag races here and, of course, drugs. But if you're not into any of that, you won't have no problems with the police. So I think they need to do more as far as background, and they need to try to have different ethnicities, you know, white, black, Hispanic, Asian, just try to have a mixture of people so that in the community, people feel like there is a representation of themselves within the police force and you can feel more comfortable.
That's pretty much all we have. Again, know your history, learn it, look at what ways you can change. Take a look in the mirror and then offer solutions, because at the end of the day, that's what we need. I'm afraid that within the next month, we're going to hear of another situation. I'm afraid that in the next month or two, we're going to have another situation, possibly like Dallas. It's real easy to say it must stop, it must end. But that doesn't do anything just to say that. We really need to work on these three things that I suggest. And again, if you have options, suggestions, share them with others. It doesn't have to just be with us. Take the time when you see people on your social media accounts saying things that are disingenuous. You don't have to call them names, but just respectfully comment. Maybe some of the articles that I use that you can look at, maybe you can share with others. We've got to spread the word. Harris, I thank you for the time. I appreciate you jumping in, giving your insight. I appreciate everyone out there listening. Again, if you want to head over to podwabbit.com, you can find all the contact information. You can find links to this show and others. Harris, how do people find you on social media, sir?
They can find me on Twitter at FW_Harris. And they can find me, if they want to email me, at FW_Harris@podwabbit.com.
All right. Thanks again. So a bit of a somber type of a mood in terms of this particular topic, but it's something that I take very seriously, that I know Harris takes very seriously, and many of us do. So please interact, share. We may come back and do another podcast down the road. I don't want this to be a one-time deal and we're done. If we find more solutions, if we hear other ideas that are just as constructive, I'm going to use this microphone to be a voice to do that. As I said, I'm done with Facebook putting out issues of social issues, politics, religion. It's just going nowhere. And I'm going to rock this microphone as hard as I can to get the word out and call for people to change and push for solutions and provide you articles and places to learn your history. And if you don't like it, I'm going to keep putting it out there. So with that, we thank you for lending your ears. And as always, work hard, play harder, and be safe. And we're back. This is Intentional Grounding, Loss of Reality, and this is the bonus clips.
Now, with the bonus clips, what we're going to do is we're going to become a little bit more personable about some of the things that went on with us in our personal lives as far as dealing with police, racial issues, and things of that nature. And I wanted to start off with one thing that happened to me a long time ago when I was young. I was with some of my friends at a movie theater, and we watched Batman Forever. So that tells you how long ago this was. After we came out of the movie theater, we got in my car, and at that time I had a car. It had tinted windows, and it had nice wheels. And we were riding through a very nice part of town. It was called Oakwood in Ohio. And the speed limit was 35. I'm pretty sure I was doing the speed limit, because everybody knows at a certain time of night when you drive through Oakwood, you better be doing the speed limit or you will get pulled over. Well, anyway, I still get pulled over. And the cop, well, I'm not going to say cop, the police officer seemed to be angry. I mean, you know, he shined the flashlight on all of us in the car, and, you know, my car was loaded because it was a bunch of us that went to the movies together. And, you know, he said, well, what are you doing here? Why are you driving through here? And I explained to him that I didn't want to be on the highway, and it was quicker for me to go this way so I could get back on Main Street and drop my friends off. Well, he opens my car door, pulls me out of the car, throws me on the hood. Yes, I said throw. He threw me on the hood of my car. Okay, he went through my pockets and just, you know, rifled through me, if you will. And then he got in my driver's seat of my car. He sat down and he was digging around, you know. Mind you, my friends are still in the car, okay? And he went through my glove box and then he reached under my seat and he said, oh, what's this here? Like he found something because he felt something underneath the seat. And then when he pulled it out, it was my Bible. Because normally when I have a car, I always keep a Bible in the car. That's just how I am. And everybody in the car laughed because they all knew that I kept a Bible in the car. So everybody started laughing really hard. And he got really angry. And he threw the Bible down on the seat when he got out of the car. And then he put me back in the car. And he wrote me a ticket for driving 37 miles an hour in a 35. 2 miles over the speed limit. He wrote a ticket up for that just to have something to say. So that's one of the things I went through.
See, I'll come at it from the opposite angle in terms of, I think a couple of years back, I counted up the number of times that I was pulled over, and I admit I was a lead foot. I had a VW Corrado, which if you're familiar with the old Sciroccos, it was the spinoff of that version. It was even red, and I was just obnoxious looking back on it. But bottom line, the time that I had that vehicle, I must have been pulled over a good 30, 40 times. I got pulled over on the way to defensive driver's school, just being an idiot. Now, I've mentioned that my dad's black, and I'm very, if anything, pale pasty color, just be honest. And I never had one issue. Now, that does not mean I'm out there saying that that's how it's going to go down. So I fully recognize that. So, yeah, I did what they told me to do, but I was never harassed. Now, I doubt they know my background, but I'm not going to go out there and say, this is how you're supposed to be. So I kind of come at it from the other angle that, yeah, I've been pulled over plenty of times. But I honestly say this. I think my skin color had something to do with not having any issues. Because trust me, there was one incident where in a town, I'm not going to repeat the town, where I actually was trying to hurry home to eat some dinner because I had a fast the next day. And I passed, this is a town I knew the police department, and I was evading the officer. And I came to the main street. He actually put me in the back seat of the car, did not do anything physical, but because he knew me and everything of that sort, and let me go. Now, at the time, I didn't think anything about it because it was a small town and we knew everybody. But later on, I thought, I wonder what would happen if I was not in the area, if I had darker skin color. Would that have been the same outcome? Just something to throw out there.
Well, I can tell you of an instance that is true that happened, and it affected me and my family because years ago, I was just young and stupid, if you will, but I had gotten into a fight with somebody out in the street. It escalated to nearly what you would call a block fight, if you will, where everybody on the street had basically took up sides and everybody began the fight. Now, there was a police officer in this city, and I won't name names, but he came out there, and mutually everybody didn't like this person because they knew he wanted to harass people. He wanted to hurt people. He wanted to beat up people. Well, this began to happen. Like, he grabbed somebody, he threw them down on the ground, and the police tried to surround people so we couldn't see what had happened or what had took place. But there were so many people on the block that were coming out, and it got pretty bad to where it was getting ready to escalate to some serious violence. And I remember a friend of mine, he was up at the top of the corner, if you will, and he had his car, he had his trunk open. And everybody knew that he had an assault rifle. And he just stood there, and he gave everybody a signal. And, you know, the signal was, hey, I'm getting ready to fire. When I pull this out, drop to the ground, meaning he was going to start shooting at the police because he saw what the police were doing. And I remember that was the first time when I said to myself, I really didn't trust or want to be around the police at that point of my life.
So let's fast forward today, Harris, in terms of what are your views of the police department?
Well, you know, a lot of maturity and a lot of growing. So I'm totally different now. I obviously believe people are people. There are good and bad in all. And the odd thing about it is, you know, now I live south of the Mason-Dixon, and it seems like the police treat me better on the south side of the Mason-Dixon, because when I was in Texas, I never had problems with police. I would get pulled over. They were nice. They were polite, friendly, you know, did what they had to do, and they sent you on your way. Like Dallas, Waco, all of these places that I've been, they were good. Even the Border Patrol, same thing. Because, see, I drove a Chevy Blazer at the time, and the windows were real tinted and dark just because, you know, the sun is so bright there. And at night, I would get pulled over because they would say, well, you know, we haven't seen you drive on, you know, this side of town. And, you know, sometimes the, you know, the heroin or the coke runners, they may try to pick a new route to drive through, and since, you know, a Blazer with tinted windows, they would pull me over, and I would just say, well, hey, you're more than welcome to, you know, open up the vehicle and check everything out and do what you need to do. Just, you know, put everything back the way that it is, and, you know, I'll go back on my way. So, and same here in Florida, too. You know, they've been really good about stuff.
It's interesting you mentioned that. When I was in the reserves in the Air Force back in the early 90s, or mid-90s, I should say, some friends of mine, we were stationed out of San Antonio, and we drove down to Laredo. And, you know, this is before you had to have a passport to go into Mexico. And we had two cars, and there were, and I didn't think about anything, I didn't think about this really at the time, but two of my black friends were in my vehicle, and then there were four other white guys in another car. And the one thing that I'll never forget is, you know, I was new to Texas, but the guy that was riding with me, he was from the area, and he said, hey, you know, did you know that you can actually wave to people and they wave back? And being from up north, he thought, no, there's no way, because we never did that. And sure enough, so we were having fun with it. Everybody that passed us by, because to me that was kind of new, and like, wow, people actually do that while driving, because it was a two-lane road. And we saw out in the distance, a police car come up ahead. Well, okay, let's wave to them and sure enough, they wave back. So we go across the border. We do our thing. We were there for, I don't know, maybe 2 hours or so. And as we're coming back, doing the same thing. Now, our friends were in front of us, and I think we were probably doing maybe 5, 10 over the speed limit. And we see another cop car coming up ahead, do the same wave. But then we notice in the rearview mirror, he flips a U-ey, pops on his lights, and we thought he's going to catch the people in front of us for speeding, but we get pulled over. And they actually made us get out and dump the entire contents of our car on the side of the road. And then what they told us was, hey, we saw you coming down. We get people that come in to do drugs. Now my friend asked, well, hey, the guy's in front of us. And he said, sir, have a good day. And, you know, we were left there on the side of the road to pack our vehicle up. Now, you know, we had bought a bunch of things while we were in there, so we had to stand there. And our friends had pulled over and were laughing at us, but it kind of sat like, wait a minute, it seems kind of odd. Now, obviously, you know, there was no harassment in terms of physical brutality, things of that sort, but it kind of crossed our mind as we were leaving, and we had that conversation. You know, I wonder, did he pull us over because, you know, you had black folks in the car? This is the conversation we were having on the way back. We didn't have that with our other friends that we left. It wasn't really necessary, but that was something that had happened.
And, you know, the thing is, I know that there are good police officers out there, and I know, sadly, there are, you know, bad people that are in the police department that want to hurt people of other color, whether it be, you know, Hispanic, whether it be Asian or whatever, or, you know, and on the flip side, and people rarely talk about it, you know, there are black police officers that may not like white people and may want to harass or bother them too. So, you know, that has to be brought up too as well.
You're right, and I know that exists, and I think what I really wanted to focus on for this episode here is, look, we're not trying to put blame and label everybody, because we've been on that other side of the fence in terms of that labeling that all blacks are this, all blacks are that, and it needs to stop. And yeah, you're right, we can't be doing the same thing too, but you know, I just keep going back to the history. And every time that I read a new article and I read something or learn something, where I look at numbers and statistics, and even that, some people, I think, tend to, we mentioned cherry-picking history. I've seen people pull numbers out that kind of try and paint a picture that it's more whites that are running into a foul of the law. And then I think, well, you've got a higher population of whites than you do black folks. So at some point, yeah, we got to move past the whole pointing fingers. And if you've had an experience with the police, yeah, that's going to give you a different view. But is that wrong? Is that something that, okay, you need to put it, you need to squash it because not everyone's like that? But I can't get out of my head, when we look at other situations, I keep bringing up the situation with a woman who's raped. And that's why I mentioned, think about the victim and their thoughts. No, not all men are rapists. But if you've been in that unfortunate situation, I don't see people telling that woman, get over it, you know, let it go. It just really bothers me when it comes to this particular issue, that I know what it is personally because of the history, but I just wonder if some people don't. And I get we need to work together, and I get there are good people that do things. I know there are police chiefs out there that are working their tails off to make sure that their department is interacting with the community and doing good things. I completely understand that. But like I said earlier, we can have this conversation about both sides and not being disrespectful to those that are doing goodwill. And I think that's where the focus of this particular podcast is on, is aimed at those in the community that speak of ignorance and those police officers that, for whatever reason, perpetuate it.
Right, and the thing is, when you realize that certain officers are perpetuating the stereotype, you have to address that issue quickly, and you have to do it with an unpardonable prejudice. And when I say that, I mean whether they need to be in jail, whether they need to be immediately kicked off the force or whatever. I mean, let's take one person. Let's look at Mark Furman. I mean, we know what type of person he is, and to see him on ESPN narrating, well, I won't say narrating, but he sure got to talk about and give his two cents about what happened with OJ, I found that highly disrespectful because he didn't even represent himself correctly in court or as a police officer. Therefore, he shouldn't have been allowed to speak on anything that he did. Only an upright citizen, no matter what profession you're in, should be allowed to have that type of venue to talk to fellow listeners and tell them things. Because can I trust him? I mean, we know that he's lied in court about many other things. So anything that he says that comes out of his mouth can't be trusted, Hankins.
It's a tough call because the history of the LAPD, as I mentioned earlier, it's not the greatest. Now, that doesn't mean that every single LAPD officer is of Mark Furman's ill. And
right.
For anyone that can't get that, that's a you problem. And again,
right.
It just bothers me that we can't even have that conversation without someone having that thought that just because we are critical of a Mark Furman, a insert name here of handfuls, or even if there's dozens. I mean, and again, just because I say handful, it's not saying that it's only a few. Whatever the number is, we completely understand that is not a representation of the whole, just as those within our own community that choose to run afoul of the law, we understand that is not a representation of the entire community. Now, we haven't gotten into other issues as far as why, and there's different conversations that we can have, I believe, outside of this particular topic. What are solutions we have to fix, whether it's poverty, whether it's jobs? We could get into a whole subject about drugs and how that's been an issue. There's just tons of different things, but again, the focus on here is what can be done to address the issue with blacks and the relationship of police officers in that interaction. I don't think it's something that is rocket science. I think we've brought some issues to the table. The question is, can we get anything done? Because, again, my fear is, Harris, that in the next month, 2 months, heck, even within the next 3 months, we're going to hear. And the problem is, who knows? I mean, I think even since what happened in Minnesota, there was another case. I don't recall where this was, but this is going to be an ongoing, concurring event. And as long as we are quiet and don't say anything, the people that I have addressed and called out are going to continue to do things in their lives. I mentioned the part about checking in on family members. I mean, how many people are going to have to do that in the white community? And it's not, and see, that's the thing. When I say that, it's not a knock against anybody. It even feels, some people, you know, like they feel uncomfortable. Why are you saying me? I'm not. I mean, if you really listen to what's going on, and that's the other thing too. Let's acknowledge it. There are folks in the white community that come out to protest, that come out and speak against what exactly we are saying. And because we didn't mention
it, at the risk of their own lives too.
Yes, and because we didn't mention it in this podcast doesn't mean we are not aware of it. And it's not a slight. It's not saying your phone. No, it's greatly appreciated. We understand in the history of civil rights, there have been folks that are white that come out and march, that protest. Completely aware of that. And I think maybe that's what's the missing ingredient here is we can have a conversation. It doesn't mean we are negating all the other good that is going on. And I think maybe that's kind of the first step, that those listening that think that we're doing that, you really need to hit the reset button and understand. And again, that's where history is important. If we know that, we know the history. But if you don't, then it's hard to grasp that. And it's not a knock even at you. That's the whole purpose of this. It's, look, we want to educate. We want to give you that knowledge. Not asking you to fully understand, fully embrace. There may be things you're maybe not comfortable. That's okay. But how can you expect to get things to change when people just don't get it?
And you can tell that people don't get it because I heard this quote, and it's been used often. They say, well, you think that since Barack Obama is in office and that he's president, that things would change and that things would be a whole lot different now that there's a black president in office. And if you really believe that, that's comical, because in actuality, you should know that this would bring out more tension and more duress from people having him in office. So putting him, his name, or putting him into the situation has nothing to do with what's going on.
Yeah, and it shouldn't, because it's kind of an excuse. I mean, it all comes down to us. Getting a little off topic here, I've always said the presidency is a puppet. And if you are putting your faith, your confidence, your beliefs in the Oval Office to get things changed, then you're not quite fully aware of, one, you're dealing with politics, and as long as people remain ignorant and continue to vote in the same people that continue to do nothing in D.C., then nothing's going to change. So it starts with us. It doesn't start with Obama. It doesn't start with Bush or Clinton or anybody else. We have to educate ourselves. And again, a little bit of a side topic, to get people in positions to enact these. In our particular topic, what can we do to better train our officers? What can we do to ensure that their mental makeup is fit to carry a badge and a gun? Do they have the proper training for de-escalation techniques, as opposed to rushing in, guns blazing, ready to take somebody out based on whatever preconceived notions? Again, not everyone is like that. We're understanding of that. But we've got some bad apples, and how do we identify those bad apples and remove them? I mean, you've just given several examples in your personal opinion based on living in Dallas and Waco and where you're at, that you have not had bad experiences. Clearly something is working. You've already mentioned about DPD, and I've heard that mentioned in terms of what their chief of police is trying to do. I've heard of other similar stories. So yes, there are good things being done. How do we replicate that across the country? And then how do we deal with people that went rogue, like in Dallas, because that puts a bad stain on things. That doesn't make any progress. But then people look at it. I mean, trust me, when that thing went down, even just in the initial reactions on Twitter, there they go again. You know, we talked about that quick reaction, wait till things are done. But just that one person just gives another black eye. So yes, there are those in our community. What can we do to address that?
I don't think the issue can be addressed, because you never know when that one weed is going to pop up through the whole garden of grass.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say that, let's look at everything for what it is. They did everything right. They had talked to the police. They said, we're going to do a nonviolent protest. We're going to march through, you know, this part of downtown, and then we're going to end it here. The police knew everything was fine, and then all of a sudden, you know, you heard gunshots. And to be honest, I think the police did a good job and showed their training, because I think had this been in another city, who knows, they may have just fired back without even trying to, you know, really ascertain the source or figure it out, because you figure police were dropping to the ground. So they wanted to return fire, but they were patient. They, They hurried, they waited till everybody got back. They tried to see who the target was, and then they returned fire. In other cities, that may not have happened.
Well, the other thing, too, is this happened when the parade was ending, or the protest was ending. So people were heading out and ready to go, and you're right. That's the other thing, too, that really bothered me when people were saying, well, now they're running from the police officers that they are protesting being protected. And again, just missed the entire point. This was corroborated with the community and the police department, so they knew what was going on.
Right, they worked together hand in hand. They both knew what was going on.
Now, the other thing I would have to say, based on what I've seen when these situations happen, and again, we're getting a little off topic here, but when you got a shooter, a lone shooter, based on what I've seen, that's where the police, I believe, are good in their tactics and trying to either cordon off suspect or suspects. That part they seem to have down. You know, we look at what they have happen in Orlando and San Bernardino and these other situations. When it comes to finding and pursuing an active shooter or shooters, from what I've seen, they seem to have that process down. So the question then is back on topic to what we're talking about. Why can't the process be curtailed or aligned for the situation during traffic stops or when someone calls 911 for, in the case of Altan, in terms of an alleged someone waving a gun or whatever, you know, and those are always the gray areas because of, you know, it was someone, you know, how people, when they give stories, was it right? Did they not see something, etc.? How can that be addressed? And I'm sure there, you know, we probably could find, I mean, you've already said it yourself. You've been pulled over and have not had the experiences that we're talking about in this particular episode with these two folks. You're still here talking to me. So, you know, something, whether it was how you interacted with him, like you've talked about, how he interacted with you, what can we pull from that and then spread it elsewhere?
I know what I do as a citizen whenever I get pulled over now. I don't care if it's raining, snowing, whatever it is. I roll all my windows down. I turn my vehicle off. I take the keys out of the ignition. I stick my hands out the window of the car with the keys in my hand so that way they can see I'm not trying to run, I'm not trying to hide, and I'm not trying to cause problems. And most of the time, a police officer will walk up to me and he'll just say, okay, well, I see you have your hands out the door or whatever. I pulled you over for such and such reason. May I see your license and your insurance or whatever? And then I'll even tell them, well, I'm going to put my hand back in the vehicle because my wallet is in my pocket and I need to pull that out. Is that okay? I mean, I just comply so that way they know that there is no trouble and everything is okay. But I would also like to say this. I would tell people to invest in a dash cam because I am getting one here Thursday. I'm going to get a dash cam for my vehicle. And I think internal affairs, as far as the police and the things, they need to make sure every police vehicle has a dash cam, and they've been starting to put cameras on the officers too and, you know, try to get as much footage as possible. And then internal affairs is going to have to stop being lenient on police officers and start locking up some of these people so that way they know they just can't get away with anything. And I'm talking about the ones who are looking for trouble, not the officers that are doing their jobs correctly.
Yeah, and brought up some good points. And what you talked about, how you act if you get pulled over. And you're right, if you do what has been asked. But there's part of me, Harris, that I'm just going to be honest with you, the fact that you have to go through all that to begin with.
Yeah, that's That's bad, but you know, at the same time, if you want to live, you do what you have to do.
I know, and that is the thing. I saw a graphic, another meme today that someone posted, and it basically said, police pulls you over, you follow the law, no issues. But then they had the person in handcuffs. Police pulls you over, you don't follow the request, you're down on the ground, shot. And it just, I guess it's just the messaging that just sends that, hey, if you do this, everything's going to be okay. And
what I don't understand, and excuse me for cutting you off, you know, when we're dealing with these traffic stops, what happened to the taser? I mean, now we're going directly to lethal force. And I thought the taser was supposed to be used first as the primary, and then, you know, lethal force, your Glock or whatever, you know, you have the 6 hour as your, you know, that's your all out, I have no choice option, and then, you know, you have to put somebody down. I mean, explain that to me.
The problem with the taser, I think a couple things. One, you're dealing with massive body. The guy in Louisiana was a big dude. They did use a taser on him. The other thing, too, is my understanding is once that discharges and goes through your body, you can actually get right back up. It's not something that puts you down and you're incapacitated for 10, 15 minutes, because they have done these demos where they put the guy down for a couple seconds. You've got the electricity through you, and then once it's done, you actually can get back up and whatever you want to say, you know, wrestle with or whatever if you're being uncooperative. So I think it's just more of a temporary stopgap. That's why I'm talking about these de-escalation techniques. I keep going back to the example, the psych hospital and in prisons. In terms of, I mean, in prison, the guards don't even have guns. And if there's someone that gets out of hand, they have ways of getting the person under control. I'm not saying that everyone dies, but usually the inmate doesn't die. And they're already in there for convictions, murders, kills, etc. And then in the psych hospitals I'm talking about, again, I understand you're dealing with a different type of population versus the cops in the street. I get that. I really am trying to get at the essence of de-escalation, because if it can be done in other areas, why does it have to be that it seems in these cases? And again, when I say this, people are going to say, well, if you follow the law, to me, that just makes it too simple. Because if that was the case, then if everyone followed the law, we wouldn't have any issues. But then people apparently don't follow the law because of previous experiences. You just gave an example earlier where you were thrown up on the hood of your vehicle.
And I followed the law. I complied. I did everything I was supposed to do.
But that experience, I mean, you are driving around before all that happened. Let's just hypothetically say, hey, your expectation from the police department is to protect and serve. If you get pulled over, you expect to have a reasonable process to do whatever the officer needs to do to get information. But then now you're now thrown up on the hood. How does that sit in your mind going forward? Let's say that happens again. You do everything, and another time you get thrown on the ground, get a knee in the back. How does that sit in your psyche in terms of the next time they roll up behind you, and you're in your mind, you've now had two instances where I could be, who knows what's going to happen this time?
Well, you know, this time, being older and wiser, if these things happen, I mean, I would just simply call the Civil Rights Commission and other places like that, file complaints against these officers, and make sure that something is done. They'll know that I'm not going away. I'll put it like that. So that way they would have to be disciplined, because like you said, you just can't allow people to treat you that way, especially when you're doing what you're supposed to do. And not only does this happen to people of our ethnicity, but it also happens to other ethnicities too, including white. So, I mean, these are the same things. And then just because you're white does not mean you can't call the Civil Rights Commission is only for blacks. No, it doesn't work like that. It's everybody has civil rights. So you can call these places and you too can get help when things like this happen to you.
You know, I'm going to throw something at you that I just kind of thought of. You remember the show Cops?
Yes.
And we watch how they would take people down. Now, I understand it's on TV, but do you recall an episode where someone was shot and killed by a police officer?
Never.
And I'm not saying that they would show that. I guess what my point is, it goes back to this whole, I don't want to say de-escalation, but they were always able to get the victim, so not say victim, the offender, so to speak, right, in custody. Now, we could argue the techniques they use, whatever, but my point is, in those episodes, the person went to jail. They were handcuffed. They were apprehended. And my point with that is, they can do something. And if we're going to be real for a minute in terms of reality check, Let's go inside the neighborhood of a black community, and let's go to, I don't recall the particular incident, but the girl who was put down on the ground by the police officers in the videotape. Let's go to the female girl in LA back in the, 50s or 60s, who was gunned down in front of her house. I mean, if people want to go there, and I hate doing this, but if people want to go there in terms of it's just simply behaving and doing what the officer says, I'm sure if we took the time, we could pull out examples of where people have been doing what they've been asked to, and for whatever reason, you're dealing with someone that has whatever mindset, and they are roughed up or even done worse to, bones broken, etc. I mean, I talked about the history of the LAPD. They were known at one point. Their job was just to go out, apprehend suspects, put them in the paddy wagon, kick some teeth in, break some bones, take them to jail. This is history. And when you grow up in that neighborhood, and that's what you see happen to your mom and dad, and then the opportunities aren't there to be able to get out of the neighborhood. And then what are you left with? You're running drugs. You're doing things that are going to get you into trouble. I mean, it's just a cycle that repeats. And again, I'm getting a little off topic in terms of other issues relating to it. But I just really am cautious in terms of it. It's just this simple to do. And in theory, yes, if you cooperate, if you do what's asked, in theory, you should not have a bad experience. But I just want to be careful and not giving out this message. I'm not giving the message that you need to retaliate. That's not what I'm saying. But I don't want to come away in this message that just do what they say, all will be fine. I think I would be doing a disservice to put that message out there.
I just want to say that we as people need to know and understand that it starts with ourselves. I just think it's a shame that there's people out here who's more concerned with, you know, animals, nature, and things like that, but not your own fellow man. I mean, it's okay to love animals and nature, because I do too, but it's like somebody will save a deer, somebody will save a cat from a rescue shelter, but if a person is beaten in the streets and killed for something that they didn't do, there's no empathy there. And to me, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, you're right. It's got to be start looking in the mirror and see. And that's what I brought up that subject about, you know, love thy neighbor, do unto others as, you know, you hear those things. And in theory, they're great things to hear. But in practice, whatever the reasons are, we're not going to be able to find that here, you and I talking, and get it fixed. But it doesn't happen. And you're right. I think we all have a part to play in this. You and I, as far as, you know, what our thoughts are and the message that we convey, and not to send out mixed signals and tell people to do things they shouldn't be doing. You know, other folks that have never had to deal with interactions with police and don't have to call and check on family members to make sure they get home safely. How do you interact with others, and what messages do you spread on social media? What's the role of the police department? I'm fearful that we're going to have this conversation again, and I'm just really, really tired of, you know, we're going to have another conversation. Let's talk about it some more. It's enough. You know, let's have another protest in the cities. Okay, you get out there and walk the streets, have your moment, but at the end of the day, what have we accomplished? You know, another offside track, Occupy Wall Street. That was supposed to be the big thing to get change, and that died away, and nothing's changed. So at some point, we need some real solutions. I think it's simple, but it's not, because of mindsets of everyone. Well, folks, we thank you for sticking by for some bonus conversation. Again, love to hear from you. I hope we are not having this conversation, but as this is a reality check, we know we'll probably be back talking about another situation, and that's just unfortunate. Harris, thank you for your time again. Any closing thoughts you have, sir?
No, I just thank you for allowing me to share my instances.
All right, I appreciate it. Well, again, folks, that is a wrap. We've mentioned where you can find us, but again, in case you're not sure, it's podwebit.com. You got all of our contact information. Love to hear from you. Please share. And as always, we thank you for listening. Until next time, again, work hard, play harder, and be safe out there.